Chapter 21. Wine. In this chapter, I talk about how tech brings new voices into old industries, I make some wine recommendations, and I tell you what to drink with kimchi. You didn't think I could write this whole book and not mention wine, did you? In this one man's point of view, what has happened to wine in the last half decade since I stopped being as intimately involved with it is nothing short of transformative. So many fun things have happened. Wine has grown to become a standard in American culture. Rosé wine has finally established itself in the United States. That makes me smile quite a bit. People are trying lots of different wines. That makes me smile too. But the thing that is really making me smile is how many new voices have emerged. I have enormous respect for Robert Parker and the Wine Spectator, the two most powerful voices that dominated the industry long before I entered the field, and throughout my entire wine career. They were monumental and served a real purpose for their time. Yet, what a great evolution to see how many new voices have been able to emerge because of social media and tech. New apps where people can leave reviews, blogs, hundreds of thousands of pieces of content put out by bright new personalities in the wine community, especially on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and Pinterest. It's been inspiring and exciting to be able to learn from so many different perspectives, in addition to incredible thought leaders like Jancis Robinson, Wine Spectator, and many others. As in all other sectors that provoke passion in so many, we're living in a time where we have access to better debates and more original stories, which I think allows consumers to enjoy a richer exploration of a beverage and cultural touchstone that's been around since the beginning of time and will be around when most of us are gone.
Hey, this is Charlie Ebersole, founder and CEO of the company and Gary Vaynerchuk disciple. I'll be reading the next questions in the Ask Gary V book. Thanks for listening. What wine bar or restaurant would you recommend to a first-time visitor to New York City?
Some of you may know I'm a co-founder in an app called Resy, R-E-S-Y. Please download it now. So I had to make that plug. That's a right hook if you are keeping score at home. And on that app, we have tremendous restaurants that I'm a big fan of, including Rosemary's, Minetta Tavern, Toro, Scarpetta, Carbone, Charlie Bird, Balthazar. I'm a huge fan. I'm also an enormous fan of a wine bar called Terroir, which dominates here in New York City. You should definitely check out those spots.
Tea, coffee, or wine?
The answer is water these days, unfortunately, or fortunately. I literally couldn't drink water for the first 38 years of my life. I've finally gotten there, but I'm still struggling with it. Under normal times, it would go wine, coffee, tea, which is a new phenomenon. I like tea better than coffee, but coffee is very interesting to me. By the way, hit me up on Twitter or Instagram if this is true for you as well. I actually use coffee as a comfort food now. I actually probably have 4 to 6 cups of coffee poured for me on a given day when I'm in New York City, but I may consume 3/4 of one. I just have it there as a comfort food. I actually grew up, ironically, with tea that way. In the Russian culture, you just have it a lot. But really, it's wine for me, and then a big drop off from there. Oh, and one last thing. I'm a humongous root beer fan. Unfortunately, I haven't had any root beer for the last 18 months as I have not have consumed a single glass of soda since I've been on my new diet.
What wine goes with kimchi?
You know, I'm Eastern European, so I love pickled foods. High acid whites are a tremendous place to go here. I also think thick white wines. I'm a big fan of Rhone Valley white wines for this. So Roussan, Viognier, Marsan. These are the varietals that I think will go best with kimchi. I'd highly check those out.
On Fridays, we drink wine. What's a good drinking home alone bottle to yourself wine?
In the book, I gave 4 distinct recommendations. I'm not going to do that here in the audiobook to continue to mix it up. Let me say a couple things. Number one, if you want to fall in love with wine, and it's a great thing to fall in love with, as I have, the number one key is to try different things. The biggest mistake that people make is they find one wine they like and they drink it to death. Pinot Grigio, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay. And I don't mean the same brand. I mean just the same varietal. So the first thing I would do is try different kinds of wines every night. Fiano, Greco di Tufo, Grenache, Petit Verdot, Chinon. There are so many wines out there, but yet we only drink 7 or 8 or 9 of them. So explore, explore, explore. Start a club or a system that makes you try 52 different wines on the 52 Fridays in the year. You would be stunned where your palate is and where your passion for wine is 1 year later.
When someone gives you a horrible glass of wine, how do you politely get rid of it?
You know, it's funny. I made my name as being the anti-snob, anti-establishment. So I probably got more polite with this in 2006 and on when I was a personality in the wine world than I was from, let's say, 98 to 2006 when I was fairly in it. But I always recognized that most people weren't into wine the way I was, so I shouldn't impose that snobbery on them. You know, to me, the answer is actually quite easy, and I do it all the time. I just kind of push it to the side and start doing other things and try to distract. I'm like, look, a bird over there. You know, it's like I start drinking water. I start eating foods. I change up my seed. I start to mingle. I don't think there's anything good out of like dissing somebody for a crappy glass of wine. The other thing is, I've got to admit, and this is weird, and I don't know how many people are like this. I actually don't mind a crappy glass of wine. It actually helps me appreciate good wine. Because I go to so many ball games and I'm in so many dude-type atmospheres, I've drank a lot of crappy wine in the last several years. Even on my diet, it's been the one thing that I haven't totally cut out. And I've had my fair share of crap in 2015 and early 16. I just kind of smile and move on and appreciate the context. You don't know when something's great unless you've had something that's average. And I don't mind taking the biggest upside. Listen, I'm an optimist. I take the most out of having a crappy glass of wine. But if I want to decline, I bob and weave.
Is the high-end wine business a complete hoax?
Yes and no. Let me explain. Anything high-end that I'm not into is a hoax. The high-end watch business is a hoax. For me to spend $5, $10, $25, $50, $100,000 on a watch, I'd literally rather rip my eyeball out of my body than buy a $10,000 watch. Yet, for my homie Kevin Rose, who runs Houdinki, or for AJ, who's now become passionate about it, or for millions of people, they love it. Cars. For me to buy a $100,000 race car to drive around on the weekends so I can rekindle my youth, or whatever people get chicks, or whatever people do that for, is a complete hoax. I don't want a Lamborghini. They stink. But for me to buy a $200 custom-made Jets jersey of a player that may play one snap in a season because he's on the practice squad is one of the great ways for me to spend $200. Because for me, when I go to a football game and real fans see me wearing it and they realize right then and there that I'm a bigger fan than they are because I've got a practice player's jersey on, that's what I want to get off. Every industry is predicated that way. Are expensive wines better? Better produced? Taste better than inexpensive wines? Yes. If you are unable to taste that because you don't have context, then it's no. I can look at a piece of art that's worth $1 million and throw up on myself because I don't have context or subjectiveness to why that is. So the hoax of the high-end wine business is no different than the hoax of every other thing in the world. So the hoax of high-end wine is the same hoax of everything. If you don't have context, and if you don't have passion, and if you do not have appreciation, then it's a hoax.
What's your favorite city in the world to drink wine?
Now we get to go a little bit deep. The favorite city I have for drinking wine is the city that I'm in at the time when I'm drinking it with my friends and family. The one thing I adore about wine is it brings people together. If you think about when you're having wine, it is very often in, you know, positive atmospheres. Yes, of course, you can have them in a funeral. I get it. But it's a very highly positive. You tend to be around people you want to be with. Even if you're in a business environment, it's intriguing. It brings people together. And so for me, the best glasses of wine I've ever had weren't necessarily the best wines I've had. They've just been with the best people. It was at a ball game. It was with my family. My parents and I had a dinner the other day that was incredible. Just the three of us, which was very rare and very exciting. We had a very average white wine and I loved it. It tasted delicious. And so for me, the city is always going to be the times when I'm spending it with the people I love the most.
How do you tell the difference between all the wines in the store?
Well, there's one way you don't, that 93% of you do when you shop for wine, which is you look at the label and you literally make a judgment on the wine because of the label. I have good news for you. There's sneaky marketers like me that know this and play to every single psychology you could imagine to make you buy that wine, including cute pets that you love so, so much and always sell so well. I mean, look, it comes down to education, right? You are either educated and know, or you go to a shop that has people that are educated and they start recommending. But back to a couple questions ago, 52-week regimen. Put yourself on the wine exercise, learn different things. That is absolutely the way to go.